Hello, hello, ambitious achievers, and welcome back to another episode of Master of Achievement. I hope you have all been well and thriving with all your fulfilled success. I've actually just come back from Vietnam for my best friend's wedding. As in, I literally landed in Australia yesterday afternoon. So this episode is coming to you with fresh emotions from my trip, a huge sense of gratitude, and all these learnings that I had on my trip to Vietnam. So today, you're going to learn about how to unlock unlimited creativity using a unique thinking framework. Before we start, you guys know that I'm all about improving myself, and I can only do this through the advice and constructive feedback from you. So I started this podcast to learn from other successful people's journeys, but also to improve my ability to connect, communicate, and articulate these learnings to you. So if you have any advice on how I can make these episodes even better, or what you'd like me to talk about and share with you, let me know. I'll put my email in the show notes. Otherwise, if I did do a really good job, I would love it if you followed and rated, hopefully 5 stars, the Master of Achievement podcast. Now, let's get into it. If you listen to episode 3, season 1, you'll know that in my high school days, I was actually really ashamed to be Vietnamese. I was one in 8 to 10-ish other Asians in my year level. We had 100 students in our year level. And I really tried to whitewash myself to fit in. I was embarrassed by some of the Vietnamese foods my parents would pack me, you know, because fish sauce can be really pungent if you weren't used to the smell, and the strict rules I had to follow, like not being able to stay past a party at 10 p.m. You know, that's when the parties used to start, or going to tutors and Vietnamese school every weekend when all the other kids would go away to their holiday houses. I just wanted to be like the majority. But I've been back to Vietnam so many times, and it's always been with my parents to visit their hometown. So this was the first trip without them. And coming back this time with a wiser and deeper appreciation for where my parents came from and the sacrifices that they had to make to give me the life that I live today, I honestly couldn't have felt more pride and gratitude to be a first generation Vietnamese Australian. Amongst the hustle energy, there was a common mindset that I kept seeing embodied amongst the Vietnamese locals that I truly believe allowed them to thrive through poverty. And this is what I'm going to share with you today. If you have ever or ever do visit Vietnam, you will see that everyone is an entrepreneur. Everyone has some sort of business, a small business. They open shop in front of their houses, or they have these stores that they ride their bikes on. Like, if there was a way to solve someone's problem, whether it be saving someone time, giving someone more convenience, saving someone money, a Vietnamese local probably already has a business to solve it. So a little bit about Vietnam. Vietnam has a population of 97.47 million. So this was in 2021. And to put that into perspective, in Australia, we have about 26 million people. But in Vietnam, the area is only 332,000 kilometers square compared to Australia, where we have 7.688 million kilometers square meters. So Vietnam has a population that is, well, Vietnam has 72% more people, but with extremely less land compared to Australia. And now 4.4% of Vietnamese locals live under the poverty line. So the poverty line is considered to be $3.65 USD a day. And that's equivalent to about 90,000 dong a day. And to put into perspective, a meal in Vietnam, even the ones on the street, usually cost around 20,000 to 40,000 dong. So there has been a huge improvement in the amount of people coming out of poverty. So you wouldn't consider the majority of Vietnam poor anymore. So we call it non-poor, but there's still a lot of people who face financial instability, you know, labor informality, climate and health shocks. So there are still a lot of people who are grappling with that. On one of my tour days, though, we visited the Kyushu tunnels and a few small islands along the Mekong Delta, one of those islands being a coconut island. The coconut island is extremely abundant with coconut trees and coconut fruit, and the locals would use the coconut leaves, the coconut stem, the coconut fruit, you know, the fibers from the coconut fruit to make mats, undies, clothes, bags. And if they couldn't use that or they couldn't sell it, they would then repurpose those items as fuel for fire. You know, they would use the coconut flesh to make confectionery and coconut milk and coconut sugar and flour. They would use the coconut shell to make bowls and kitchenware. You know, they were able to come up with all these creative ways to make different products from the coconut, because coconut was such an abundant and free resource for them and they needed to make money. They wanted to make the most out of this resource, this product, without anything going to waste. That's when I truly witnessed the power of poverty. When you need to make money to survive, you can and you will come up with the most creative ways to create product to make money. I think it's such an important lesson, because when we have our backs up against the wall is usually when we are forced to become most creative. And it reminds me of this section in Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where he talks about the principle of paying yourself first. Always paying yourself first and pay your creditors second. You know, like your bill, your phone bills, your credit card. And the reason why you always pay yourself first and you pay your creditors second, well, there's a couple of reasons, is because we always put ourselves last. So the principle of putting yourself first means that you are honoring self and you are able to invest it in income generating assets. But also by paying your creditors second, these people, these organizations, they're always going to chase you for that money. And by doing that, you should be more motivated, or it should give you more motivation to come up with more creative ways to generate income and make money so that you can pay them. Often when we're trying to create things, we can fall into this trap of needing more to be able to create more. I fall into this trap. For example, like when we get into a new hobby, like for me, I've been through many phases of hobbies. I've sewing, knitting, crocheting, painting, drawing, like you name it, I've done it. Whenever I'm starting a new hobby, I convince myself that I need to buy, for example, my sewing hobby, I need to buy 5 different types of materials, all these different buttons and zips, the fancy scissors that cut the material super sharp, and, you know, these fancy rulers and a fancy sewing machine. I need all these things so that I can sew. But in actual fact, I can learn how to sew and learn all these different ways of sewing by just having one type of material, some thread, and a needle. If I oppress the resources that I am giving myself, it actually forces me to be more creative in how I can create something, how I can make it work with 3 items instead of 20. And this type of thinking is called divergent thinking. This is the kind of thinking that the locals, the Vietnamese locals on that coconut island, we're implementing to make more money. The opposite of divergent thinking is convergent thinking, where you focus on one very well-defined solution to a problem. So the terms divergent thinking and convergent thinking was first coined by psychologist J.P. Guilford in 1956 to outline the two categories of how we approach problem solving. So, like I said, convergent thinking is where you focus on one very well-defined solution to a problem, whereas divergent thinking is a very flexible, free-form way of problem solving where you come up with a range of solutions to a pressing problem. But this is often where the magic happens. So the four key traits of divergent thinking is that it's fluent, that it has fluency. It has the ability to produce a great number of ideas and problems. It's really flexible, so you can propose a spectrum of solutions to the same problem. It's original. It forces you to come up with new and authentic ideas, and it's elaborate. Like, you're able to systemize and organize the details of this idea and carry it out. So how can we stimulate and practice divergent thinking? In Alex Hormozi's book, $100 Million Offers, he actually goes through this divergent thinking exercise, and it's called the brick exercise. If you have a pen and a paper, or, you know, even open it up in your notes on the phone, I want you to do it with me. It's only going to take a minute. I want you to write down as many different uses that you can think of for a brick. So I'm going to give you some time now. Write it down, maybe think of 5, 6, or yeah, if you can think of more. Okay, I know I only gave you 20 seconds. Okay, so these are some of what I originally had. You can use a brick as an external facade, a fence structure of some sort, to build a well, like to contain things within it, to use as protection, like hitting someone. I know that's a bit dark. You can use it to write, like as chalk, for example, using it on a concrete floor to write. So those are the five things that I instantly thought of. Did you have anything similar? But did you also stop to ask yourself, how big is this brick? What is it made out of? Is it made out of plastic or gold or clay or wood or metal? Because when I was doing this exercise for the first time, I didn't think about those things. I just immediately envisioned a red clay brick with 6 holes in it. And then I started thinking about all these things that I am used to seeing a red brick being used for. Now, knowing that there are more expansive options, what other uses can this brick have? So now I want you to write, you know, other uses for this brick based on the options that I just told you before. Now, here are some of Alex Hormozi's responses. You can use the brick as a paperweight. You can use it as a payment for goods. For example, it's a gold brick. You can use it as a flotation device if it was a plastic brick, or children's toy, like a Lego brick. See how if you break down and forget about the conventional associations that we've learned, you know, that a brick is a red rectangular prism with 6 holes in it, we can actually come up with even more creative ways to utilize it. That's what the Vietnamese people did on the coconut island. They didn't just see the coconut fruit as something to eat, but they thought about every part of the coconut fruit? How can we use the shell? How can we use the fibers? How can we create different ways or different products with each of these elements? And they were able to come up with all these creative and original ideas and products to sell. Of course, feel free to use this exercise for anything, because I believe that it's often something that we take for granted. It's divergent thinking is not something that we often use in our everyday lives. We're used to being on autopilot mode. Wake up, brush our teeth, catch the train, eat breakfast, read emails, so forth, so forth. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with routine. Routines are formed by our habits, and our habits help us become more efficient. This process is also known as cognitive automaticity. Cognitive automaticity is practicing our skills so much that we don't need to put conscious thought into what we're doing. We shouldn't have to think too deeply about how to walk. You know, we don't stop here and go, okay, brain, now make my right feet, my right foot walk first, and then my left, and then my right, and then my left. I'm not consciously thinking about how to brush my teeth or how to read emails because, well, it's just not efficient. But by relying heavily on our habits to go about our everyday life, we can actually depress our creativity through inducing fixation, meaning by constantly relying on our own pre-existing links between an item and what we normally associate those items with, like its most frequent uses or how we have been used to it looking, we box ourselves into what we're used to and we prevent idea generation, like we hinder our creativity. For example, what first comes to mind when you hear these words? Bus or spider? Did you immediately think, you know, for a bus, did you immediately think about a yellow rectangular long vehicle? And for a spider, a black hairy insect with eight legs? Why couldn't the bus be bright pink and curved? Why couldn't the spider be green and smooth? Divergent thinking is an exercise that I do with my accountability circle, and I highly encourage you to take, you know, 3 minutes of your day to do it with yours or even just by yourself. Just think of an everyday object and each take turns listing out abnormal uses or functions for it. We should make a more conscious effort to stimulate divergent thinking because this fuels creativity. Of course, in the workplace or in our teams, we can't always use divergent thinking. Divergent thinking and convergent thinking needs to be used in combination with each other and depending on what outcome we want to create. If we want short, sharp, effective problem solving because we're under some sort of constraint, then convergent thinking may be the best option. But if there's an opportunity for ideas to be explored and generated, then divergent thinking is the way to go. For the Vietnamese locals on that coconut island, divergent thinking allowed them to come up with several ingenious ways of creating different products from that coconut. And this enabled them to generate greater streams of income to help them out of poverty. For you, it could be how you solve your next problem or invent your next passion project or create something completely new and unconventional. So give it a try. And let me know how you go. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you thought this was a valuable episode to you, I would really appreciate it if you left me a rating and followed me. And of course, share this with your accountability circle so they can grow too. Thank you so much. I will see you or talk to you in the next one.